Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think I have an opening statement. I'm just going to answer the questions as they come forward. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let me ask you some. Let me go to the changes in the execution protocol first. Fall of last year, department made a number of changes to the execution protocol. Is that correct?
Yeah, they were based on the issue of not being able to get the various drugs, and which then culminated in us going to a compounding pharmacy to use pentobarbital.
Okay, how many change? How many times was it changed?
I don't remember, two or three.
You understand why that's frustrating to the other side?
Of course.
In each case, what was the precipitating factor?
Lack of getting the drugs from other sources. I think that's pretty well known about the, and the professor mentioned the issue of Hospira stopping the sodium pentothal, the other drugs that were involved in it. It left us very, you know, we searched all over the country for ways in which to get the drugs. Keeping in mind, please, that the statute mandates the Department of Corrections to carry out executions. And so it doesn't say try your best. It says you have to do this. That being the case, we searched every which way to do this. And we found that there was a compounding pharmacy that was willing to do that. And that's what moved us forward to change the protocol accordingly. It's the same process that's used in three or four states in the same way.
What are those three or four other states?
I think they're North Dakota, Texas, and Oklahoma, to the best of my how I may have that wrong, but I can certainly provide the states to you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any idea how long those three states have had those protocols?
I don't know that.
Okay.
I can supply that to you as well, probably.
You heard my question earlier about no known or feasible alternative.
Right.
As a director, do you have a known or feasible alternative under existing, not globally, but under existing Missouri statutes? I think those are two distinct questions that Supreme
right.
Court might have. The test might not be whether it's known and feasible under existing state statutes, but whether it's known and feasible just in general. Do you feel there is a known or feasible alternative under existing state statutes?
I do not. The only other alternative is a gas chamber.
And we don't. Do
yeah.
we have one?
We had one. I was present when we tested the gas chamber early on, when before the first execution, and the smoke came right out of the gas chamber, and it would have obviously been the demise of all the witnesses in addition to the condemned. And so that issue was really not feasible. And that's when we started the process of looking at drugs.
I want to ask you about something that I don't think has been raised. It just piqued my interest. And you provided the committee with a copy of the execution protocol. And on page 2, there's a sentence that says, basically, if the drug fails, what do the doctors do? And there's a subordinate clause of the sentence. No, it's not a subordinate clause. It's the main part of the sentence here. The English professor to my left doesn't like my use of these phrases incorrectly, but it says the curtain shall be reopened until an appropriate amount of time has passed to reevaluate the prisoner. And this is just my lack of understanding of what happens in the death penalty room. Is there a curtain that closes off the process from the witnesses so
right.
that they don't actually witness the execution?
Oh, yes,
itself?
They do. We open the curtains to ensure that when the process starts, then the curtains are opened right before that so that the witnesses do witness the execution.
Okay, so prisoners, let's just walk through the execution protocol. You don't have one in front of you. Would anybody like to supply a copy? And this committee is not going to hold it against you that you don't have this memorized.
Okay,
paragraph A, was pharmacist added to the list in the first sentence in the recent changes?
Yes.
Okay. Prior to this, had the department been procuring the drugs directly from a manufacturer?
That's correct.
Okay. Then we go to the preparation of chemicals. So we have the medical personnel prepare the lethal chemicals. You have two syringes that contain pentobarbital, and then a third syringe of saline solution, and four and five of pentobarbital, and syringe six of saline. Under the previous protocol, how many different syringes were there? When we had three drugs, was it nine syringes?
You know, I don't recall that. I'd have to have that in front of me as well.
Okay.
Glad to supply that.
The exact number's not important, but you just had multiple syringes because you had to administer three separate drugs in a certain specified order.
Exactly.
Okay, so then what happens is you get your medical personnel, you go to see, just like any person getting an IV, they try to identify the best location to do it.
Right.
They test it with saline solution. Yep. So they test it with syringe three, I suppose. No, they test it with a separate syringe?
Yes.
Okay. There might be a slight hole there, and it's not specified above. They wheel the prisoner in, paragraph D, in a way that the medical personnel, I'm on page two now, can see the prisoner's face. Is that the point at which the curtain is opened?
The curtain is open right before the actual administration, after the order is given to proceed.
Okay. So that's in paragraph E, although it's unstated in
right.
this protocol.
It's right prior to that time.
Although I assume if I asked witnesses to the last three, they would say exactly what you've said here, that even though it's not in the this you wouldn't call it, maybe you would call it a rule, but in this protocol that's the way it actually happens.
Exactly.
Okay. You've tested the line, then you insert the pentobarbital from syringes one and two. Saline is next. Then there's a sufficient amount of time to discover whether the drug has worked. If they're still breathing, you use four and five, then syringe six. Do you know how often in any other state they've had to go to the equivalent of step four?
Do not know that. We have not done that here.
Okay. Could it be, would that be most likely for, let's say you have a prisoner who weighs 550 pounds?
That'd be speculation on my part. I have no idea.
And then after the second round, that's when there's an evaluation. Curtain's reopened. I suppose, although it's not stated here, there would be a third round. I don't know what the department does if rounds one and two don't work. I don't... After that, you have the way that medical personnel dispose of the unused chemicals.
Correct.
Are there other members who'd like to ask questions? Representative Rizzo. Proceed.
First of all, thank you, Director, for being here today. I want to kind of get into some of the stuff when it comes to the pharmacy, if we could. How did we go about, or the department go about, procuring the pharmacy to supply the pharmaceuticals? Was there like a wide net cast or?
It was a wide net cast. That's exactly right. Obviously, we contacted other states to see what they were doing. Everybody is struggling with this issue to find an appropriate drug, and so a number of states now have gone to the compounded pentobarbital, and so we found a source through that way.
Was this the only one? Were there other respondents? Were there other pharmacies in the mix that you just decided this one was best? Or
I don't recall that that's the case.
Okay. Were there any background done on? Was there any background done on this pharmacy? If they've had any complaints, if there was any sort of mishandling previously?
Yes.
There was, and that the background?
We found no substantial problem with that particular source.
Okay. Now, I want to get into how we went about purchasing, because there's been things in the press and everywhere saying that this was a cash purchase.
That's correct.
So how do we go about doing that as a department? Do we, I mean, obviously there was a need. There was a purchase that was needed to happen. Do we go in and cash a check as a state, hand the, what is it, $8,000 cash off? And I mean, how does that work?
It comes out of the department's Division of Adult Institutions Expense and Equipment Fund, and yes, it is cash money. And it is taken and given to those people that are part of the protocol that are due money. And that has been happening, I want to add, since mm-hmm. the Ashcroft administration, through every governor, including Carnahan, Blunt, and now Governor Nixon. That's exactly how this has been handled. And the reason why it's been handled is because those people that are involved in this would not be involved in it if it didn't happen that way. They made it very clear to us. We would not have people to carry out the mandated statutory requirement to carry out the death penalty. They just wouldn't do it.
So when you say that, you're talking about the pharmacy. The pharmacy.
Talking about everybody that's involved with it. Everybody, including the physician, the pharmacy, everybody that's involved with the process that would be a paid individual.
So you're saying the pharmacy would refuse the drugs if they didn't get it in cash? Refuse to sell us the drugs if they didn't get it in cash? I'm trying to follow. Is that?
Yes. Yes. What I'm saying is that anybody that's been involved in this process from way back when would not be involved in it if they did not get cash money, which would keep their anonymity complete.
And
that's been part of the process, and I want to make sure that everybody understands that. The only reason why we do it that way is because we would not be able to carry out the death penalty through the statute. People would not be involved in it. And so it would be the de facto abolishment of the death penalty if we had to do that.
And then why exactly is the pharmacy in the considered in the group that needs to remain anonymous? Let me go back to my earlier question that I asked the professor. Are there other states that do that first?
Yes.
And what states are those?
Texas, Oklahoma, as far as I know, and there may be others. I don't know that.
Okay.
Once again, I can supply that information.
Yeah, that would be great. So then they are anonymous because you feel that they wouldn't continue if they were, say, outed or people were other information
they
was
out
there.
They made it a condition of being able to do this. So they made it a condition.
Have they stopped supplying us now that they've been in probably every paper in Kansas City and St. Louis?
But that's speculation and summarization, and it's not what we're saying.
So you they don't want you specifically to say who
they are. He gave our word that we would not put out that information. The way in which there are speculation about a particular pharmacy or not, that's been done externally to our department.
Are they FDA approved?
I'm sorry?
Is the pharmacy FDA approved?
I don't know that. I don't know that. I don't remember that. I mean, my staff may know that, but I don't know it off the top of my head.
Can we find that out?
Sure.
I mean, I think it's important if we're buying pharmaceuticals across state lines to know if they are FDA approved. When you start talking about compounding pharmaceuticals, you start getting into copycat drugs.
I understand. It is my knowledge that, in fact, they meet whatever legal requirements that need to be met.
And why? Okay. And so, and as far as the cash payment goes, it had to be driven. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. It had to be driven because you wouldn't obviously mail $8,000 cash. Is that?
Yes, it is transported to this place.
So how do we get around the statute, as I've been informed, that says that we can't deal with unregulated pharmacies in the state of Missouri, for instance, having no license within the state of Missouri?
All the protocol issues related to regulations, related to legal issues, I take under advisement by the Attorney General.
Okay. Okay. I was just curious about that. And I would imagine the Attorney General's office would know more about when warrants are issued, how we go about that protocol, more than the department.
Absolutely.
Because that's definitely something that I'm interested in. I'd like to go into some of the stuff about how the storage of the pharmaceuticals are. There's been questions about room temperature, not room temperature, exactly how they were brought back. Was it in, you know, a cooler or some sort of temperature-controlled environment,
sure,
something like that?
Sure. We've been assured by our expert, mm-hmm, that the way we handle this drug is appropriate.
And with this administration of chemicals over here, this protocol that you gave, you said that there hasn't been a time when you have needed to go back and inject more if it hasn't worked?
Correct.
Okay. And the protocol, you said, has been changed 3 times?
I think that's right.
And that's due to the lack of pharmaceuticals?
Yes, we could not get the drugs. I think that was well clear.
Let me ask you this. At what point during the protocol, and who is the person or persons that say it's time to do this? When there's stays or not stays, or they've been exhausted, or you know what I mean?
Clarify that. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. In the evening, first of all, we're in touch with the Attorney General throughout the day of the execution, throughout that day, and of course, way in advance as well. Prior to the when it gets near 12:01, which of course is the time that we've chosen to do that, and the reason why we've chosen 12:01, and this goes all the way back to the beginning, is because that gives a 24-hour window in case there is any activity during that period of time that could get disposed of. Prior to that time, and before we put take the offender out of the holding cell and place him on the gurney, we ask the Attorney General directly, is there any legal impediment why this person shouldn't move forward? And if he says yes, we stop. And if he says no, we put the man on the gurney with the concurrence of the governor's representative as well. And the same question is asked of the governor's representative to say, is there any, I'm drawing a blank, but with a C, somebody help me out.
Any reasoning? Any?
When the governor can defer or stop a person from being executed.
Talking about clemency?
Thank you.
No problem.
Yes, clemency. I apologize.
That's all right.
Is there clemency or any other legal impediment? If he says yes, then we stop. If he says no, we put the person on the gurney. Then once again, right before the process moves forward and the drugs are injected, those same two questions are asked of the Attorney General and the governor's representative. Is there any legal impediment to stop this execution? And both those entities know full well that the next step is we start the execution process. If they say yes, we stop. If they say no, we give the order to move forward.
So just to summarize, Attorney General signs off, governor signs off, man's moved to the gurney. Again, Attorney General signs off, Attorney General's office signs off, governor's office signs off, and then it's administered.
Process begins, yes.
Can we get into, I'd like to talk about the copying of FDA drugs, FDA-approved drugs, and federal laws in that aspect. You don't feel as though anywhere in the department or any sort of office has violated any federal laws by making copycat drugs? I mean, because essentially what we're talking about with compounding pharmacies is we want a drug that looks like or acts like this other drug.
Would you, what are you, ask me again, please?
Sure. Okay, when you get into compounding pharmacies create drugs that are like drugs, correct? They're like other drugs. For instance, to make it a little simpler, I don't know if it's close, but you would go to a compounding pharmacy to say, I want a drug like propofol, correct?
Wouldn't be like, I want propofol.
You would want propofol.
Right, and when they put it together, that's what it is.
And would Pfizer be okay with that? And Eli Lilly?
I have no idea, of course.
And all the pharmaceutical companies that spend billions of dollars on patents to make sure that drugs are not?
I have no idea.
And the federal laws that say that we can't do those things?
Anything related to whether or not something is legal or not,
sure.
I obviously run that by the Attorney General's office to advise me about that.
Yeah, no, and I understand that. I do. I'm not an attorney. I run things by this, mostly Kevin over here. So, All right. I think more the further questions I have will probably be more related to the Attorney General's office. So I'm going to stop for now. Again, I really honestly do thank you for coming today, and I know this is a very difficult subject. I know it's hard to put aside the fact that this is there are anti and pro death penalty advocates, and we're just, in my opinion, and I don't want to speak for the chair, trying to figure out how we're going about doing this. This is a hot topic and an issue throughout the country with the lack of pharmaceuticals, and we just want to make sure that if we're going to invoke this penalty, that it's done humanely, that it's done above board, and it definitely helps today to be able to answer the questions and shed some light on a subject that is a touchy subject. So honestly, I do want to thank you for coming today. I know it's probably difficult, but it does mean a lot to be able to come and answer our questions.
I appreciate the opportunity to answer your questions.
Thank you.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to make a statement, if you will allow me.
I will allow you.
Because this is a difficult setting for me. I've never been in a setting like this to talk about the proper way to execute somebody. And knowing that all things are not equal, and if you don't get it right on the front end, you're not going to get it right on the back end. When it comes to the handling of evidence, proper representation, the disparity in sentencing against certain groups of people in this country, African Americans in particular, I'm just opposed to the death penalty altogether, because I don't think we ought to take what we can't give. We can't give life, so we shouldn't take life. And that goes for the accused as well. So, you know, I'm just having some issues, and I just had to say something along that line, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
Thank you. Further questions before I ask further questions. You understand, I think we agreed, a compounding pharmacy is not Pfizer, in that you buy something from Pfizer. Let me back up. Compounding pharmacy is not a giant manufacturer of a drug, because I don't want to put one company in that sentence. The massive manufacturer, far less likely to make any errors. Would you agree with that?
Say that again, please.
You have a massive manufacturer of pharmaceuticals is less likely to make errors than a compounding pharmacy that is making smaller batches of certain drugs. That's not to say that the larger manufacturers never make mistakes,
right.
But
which is exactly why we use an independent lab, independent of the pharmacy, to test for purity, sterility, and potency.
Okay, and that's where that's what the question I was going to. So you get the sample, it's more than the sample, you get the product from the compounding pharmacy. What does the department do with the product after you've received the drug. So you went and the department spent $8,000 on this drug.
Right.
What did the department do to test the potency of the drug after it was purchased?
Out of the same batch that the drug is made, a portion of it goes to the lab for that testing. So it's the same batch of chemical that we get that is tested by the lab.
So essentially you get, there's two batches. One you take back, you brought back to the state of Missouri. I shouldn't say two batches. There are two products that you get with the purchase. One is the product, there's one batch and you get two products. One is the product you take back here to use in the execution. The second product is one that doesn't necessarily go through your hands, but which is tested by an independent
Yes.
agent, correct?
That's true.
Okay. And that agent says the drug is pure.
Potent and sterile.
Then you go forward with that sample. Is that correct?
Yes.
If you got a bad batch, you'd go back and say, we paid $8,000. We want what we paid $8,000 for.
Exactly.
And in this case, in the last three cases, each time the answer from the testing facility has been that this drug is what it purports, the pharmacy purports it to be.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions of this witness? Seeing none.
Can I make a statement?
You can make it. Yes, yes, sir.
This whole issue and the way our department has been besmirched and vilified in the press especially is really disturbing to me, because this is not what this department is about. And I want everybody to understand that we're much more than this. We're leaders in the country in prisoner reentry, in restorative justice, in our ability to find jobs and homes for our offenders that are out on the street. And so those are the things I'd rather be known for, obviously. What we do here is we understand the statute mandates for us to do. When I took this job, I knew this was going to be part of it, but I knew that there were many other things that we could do that could make a real difference in public safety overall. And I just want to say that I've got the best staff of any Department of Corrections in the United States. I'm talking about my people out on the street and the people in the prison. And that's what we really want to be known for. So this issue is disturbing to me, obviously, for that reason. I don't mind testifying about it, but it really is disturbing to me because it reflects on the Department of Corrections and our personnel, and that's not what we're about. We have excellence. Our colleagues across the country respect us, and we're held up in great esteem by people in the corrections community around the United States, and I wanted to say that. Thank you for the opportunity for me to do that.
Thank you, Director.